The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
1490 WGCH, this is Kerry Lutz, and you're listening to the Financial Survival Network, which is brought to you by Miles Franklin. They've been in business selling gold and silver for over 20 years, and I'm a customer because when you buy, they ship. For more information, find them on the web at milesfranklin.com or give them a call at 800-822-8080 and get a free quote. WGCH. This is Kerry Lutz. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. We are live at the Hard Assets Conference in New York in beautiful renovated Times Square. I've got three major experts with me here. Keith Schaefer, Marin Katusa, and Mickey Fulp, here to talk about fracking and the energy revolution that's taking place in America, across the continent. So, Mickey, explain to us what fracking is, how it works, and what we're seeing here.
Well, I am going to defer to a couple of experts in fracking. What I would like to explain is the geology of oil deposits and gas deposits. So what's happened here is historically, oil reservoirs are exploited, and you have a concept of source rocks, a migration pathway, and reservoir rocks. So historically, we have exploited reservoir rocks through new technologies, including advances in horizontal drilling and hydrofracking. We have now been able to create fractures in the source rocks. And these are the tight shales, which do not have the necessary natural porosity and permeability to be able to transport to the borehole and exploit the deposits. Historically, we leave something on the order of 70% of the oil in the ground. And now with new technology, we are able to extract some of that oil.
Okay. So clearly they call it tight gas, tight oil. Keith, we've heard so much environmental concerns. You know, we've seen gas land where people turn on their faucets and inferno. How much of it's real? How much of it is just media hype and environmental extremism?
Well, I think there is a mix, but I think the science is going to really bear out that fracking isn't anywhere near as corrosive or negative as the media has made it out to be. Just this week, in fact, the EPA did some water tests in Dimock, Pennsylvania, which was the big center in the Marcellus Shale, where residents were very worried about their water quality because of fracking, and the results came back that there was no impact on water quality.
Let a little thing like the truth come out, and many times the opponents of the technology couldn't care less about what the objective truth is. It's the fear factor, right?
I think that's true, but you know what's interesting is I don't have any real blame for the environmentalists on this. I think one of the things that they're doing is they're forcing the industry to get greener, and the industry probably wouldn't do that on its own as quickly as it is happening. So yeah, they've got some radical extremist groups there, obviously grab a lot of headlines, but the reality is that they are pushing the industry to do things a little more environmentally friendly than they otherwise would have. For example, I'm a big believer that in 5 years, all frack fluids will be food grade. You'll be able to drink it. They're pouring money into these technologies now, and I don't know when it's going to happen or how it's going to happen, but these are the types of things that the industry is working towards, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. Marin, your thoughts?
But the first thing, when you talked about the gas lands with the fire coming out of the tap, mm-hmm. that's just naturally occurring methane. Yeah. That happened before fracking hit that region. Second of all, when you talk about, Keith's completely right, at the last AGM for the Halliburton, which is the second largest service company and probably the largest in North America when it comes to fracking and horsepower, they actually drank the frack fluids. And in the movie, they say that they don't release the ingredients to these frack fluids. They actually do at the well site. They have to. So if you look at all of these different things, what is seen as unconventional is actually becoming conventional. And, you know, North America is about 15 years ahead of the rest of the world when it comes to fracking. And it's not so much unconventional, it's now conventional.
Yeah. And hey, just one other thing. So the Obama administration, we don't get into politics on this state network, but they passed rules which the industry was fearing and the investment community was fearing. And really, they don't look that bad other than the disclosure requirement of chemicals being used. How big an impact is that going to have?
First of all, Obama has to now retract this. Remember, he stated last year that by 2020, 80% of America's electricity will be generated by green power. That ain't going to happen. So now he has to go to the next solution, which is natural gas. So he's going to be trying to get all these incentives. So the reality is America needs cheap electricity to compete with the cheap labor of the rest of the developing world. So that is going to stay happening. A lot of people think that a potential black swan could be, you know, a moratorium on some of the shales. That is not going to happen.
And that's pretty reassuring. Hey, Keith, with gas around $2, dry gas, how's production going to be affected? Because we've got shut-in wells now. We've got some real challenges here with this pricing environment, right?
Well, we do. However, that hasn't stopped the industry from drilling like mad. And the reality is that even with the latest production figures, we're not seeing any significant downtick in production at all. The rig count is going down, but I think that's mostly the old vertical style rigs. And so, as of yet, Kerry, we haven't seen any dramatic drop-off in production. What we have seen, though, is a pretty big jump in demand from the power generation guys. There's been a lot of coal to gas switching, so that's really where all of a sudden this big uptick in gas that you've seen in the last 2 or 3 weeks from 2 to 250, that's the market kind of sensing, okay, if this power demand keeps up, then we're not going to hit full storage, and so maybe things aren't quite as bad as we think. But all the good news has been on the demand side. There really hasn't been any serious producer discipline to shut in production yet.
Yeah, states in the past like Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana have actually implemented that discipline through regulations forcing production cutbacks. You think that's a possibility that they're going to do that now, or is it just going to basically be a free market almost?
I think it's going to have to be a free market. There's thousands upon thousands of what I call shadow wells where they've been drilled, they've been fracked, but they're not yet completed, which means that within 72 hours they can be tied into the pipeline if the demand is there. Because a company, it's the opposite of mining. You can hold your lease for 5 years of mining and not produce. In the oil and gas world, you have to do the work on this or you lose your lease. So if you look at Keith is completely right that there's fewer drill rigs being done, but the technology has advanced so much that from one drill site you can do bi-horizontals, tri-horizontals, and the key thing is how the fracks have increased. So 4 or 5 years ago, doing 8 fracks per site was a big score, a success well. Now they're doing plus 48 fracks. So the key is to get more fluid from each well. It's about the economics. And even at a dollar gas, there's areas in the U.S. that can make a lot of money because of the liquid-rich associations to these wells.
Yeah, and because of the prices, one thing we're seeing is the talk of potential write-downs in these natural gas producers because the reserves are valued at $4 or $10, and now, you know, that's coming. Is that going to have a major effect on the sector, do you think?
I think there are going to be some surprises, but for the most part, Kerry, this is all priced into the market. Since January, when the price of gas really fell off a cliff, that reserve write-down gets priced into the stocks that are most vulnerable very quickly. So I don't see, there could be the odd surprise, but honestly, I think most of that's been priced in for the last 3-4 months.
I got a question. I studied utilities back when I was in college. The big thing were back then was called take-or-pay contracts, both on buying the electricity and for the resources necessary to produce it. Is that practice still prevalent in the industry, or is it all gone to futures and options?
No, that's still existing. So, example, in the Northwest, you can look at areas right now where the electricity is trading about 2.5 cents. Now, if you think about that, compared to some of the PPAs for these green energies that needed to be signed at, say, 11, 12 cents to be economic, the industry's changed significantly. You look at Canada, where the cheapest electricity is probably in BC because of the hydro, Quebec, and Ontario. the lowest rates you can get on a corporate level is about 3.8 cents, and that's only if you're a grandfather. So the game has really changed here, and yes, take-or-pay is still there.
Okay. Hey, thanks for clearing that up. Petrochemical industry, you got any thoughts on that, Mickey, about the effect that we're seeing on the increase in production of natural gas, bringing players like Dow Chemical back?
Well, it's Keith here. I don't have any direct experience with that, but just certainly from what I read in the media, you're hearing about companies like DuPont reinvesting $2 billion, companies like Methanex looking at mothballing South American operations and bringing plants up here simply because the feedstock is so much cheaper, like not a little bit cheaper, but like a magnitude or three cheaper. So you're seeing those things in the media. Are they happening in real life? I hope so. We're certainly starting to see a little bit of economic uptick in the States. And as Marin said, the recovery in the U.S., one of the main pillars is going to be cheap gas, cheap feedstock. So that's why fracking, the discussion on fracking, about banning fracking, is going nowhere. It's going to help improve the industry for sure, but the end result is not going to be any impairment of how much fracking gets done.
Yeah, that seems to be pretty obvious. Mickey, we talked a couple of weeks ago. You were saying in Europe it's $10 gas, and in Asia it's $15. Here we're looking at $2. So it sounds like there's an arbitrage and an export potential here if the terminals could get built,
well,
right?
Well, and so this is where LNG comes into play, and there is a potential for a tremendous arbitrage here. The concern that I have with natural gas is environmental opposition to infrastructure. We don't really have the pipeline capacity. We do not have the separation capacity. And at this point, we do not have the LNG capacity to export natural gas. It seems to me that is should be a big future for natural gas in North America. As Marin has alluded to, we're 15 years ahead of the rest of the world in these technologies. So there is a time period where I would think the rest of the world's going to end up catching up. So the time is now to build some LNG compression plants and get this gas to markets that demanded it, where they're paying $10 or $15 a million BTU.
Mickey's 100% correct, and the problem right now in North America is we're ahead on the development and production of shale gas, but we are behind in the export. The time it's going to take to permit and finance these liquefaction plants or compression plants is going to take 5 years. Right now, Russia is much better situated to export LNG. They're building their third plant. America doesn't have anything going right now. Look at West Coast and BC and Kitimat. You know, they're proposing these plants. By the time this actually gets permitted and all the NGOs get involved, America or North America may lose its lead and its advantage. So it's critical, especially when you're comparing to Qatar, Indonesia, and Russia. It's critical that North America puts this on fast track.
And then new uses, because when a fuel is this cheap, new applications inevitably arise. What about transportation fuel? Because you go to Thailand and they have these little putt-putts that are basically tricycle motorcycles that have a big can of propane on the back, and that's how you get around. Primary form of transportation, yet there's very little transportation.
You look at Dubai, Mumbai, New Delhi, CNG is very prevalent there, and that's a Canadian technology. Unfortunately, T-Boone is one of the leaders in this, and when I had lunch with him, he was saying how this would be great, but the reality is it's not going to come into the existing infrastructure in the cities. You're not going to see New York retool to go into CNG or downtown Vancouver or wherever. What the only advantage North America could do is if they put this upon the transcontinental highways and to get the big rigs to convert, because the technologies are now there. However, has it started yet? No. It's still going to take many years to build the infrastructure there. So that's the key. As Mickey pointed out, we're behind in the infrastructure to take advantage of these low energy prices.
Well, I think it's been a pretty enlightening discussion here. There's a lot happening, so people want to find out more from you, Mickey. Where do they go?
MercenaryGeologist.com.
And Marin, where can they find out more about your work?
CaseyResearch.com.
And Keith?
At oilandgas-investments.com.
All right, gentlemen. Hey, thanks so much for taking time out from the conference to have this discussion.
Thanks, Gary.
God bless you, Gary.